A new year, time for new growth. Grow your education and skills with Herzing University. Our online behavioral health programs fit your schedule and time. From an 8-month diploma program in health and human services to a 36-month bachelor's in psychology. Grow your behavioral health career with us wherever you are in your education. Your future starts now at Herzing University. Visit us online at herzing.edu or text health to 85109. Online at herzing.edu or text health to 85109.
Welcome back to the Dirr Show. I'm going to start in an unusual way by reading a letter I just got literally a couple of seconds ago. I was at your speech at Cardoza today. I'll talk about that in a minute. Your speech was my highlight of my experience. What did you think of the protesters at Cardoza today? Were they less prepared to practice than you thought before? So I was invited by the Federalist Society to give a talk on the Middle East and to talk about my book, War Against the Jews. And I came there and sitting in the front row, second row, I would say 25% of the students, it was a large crowd, 25% of the students were holding signs up, calling me a rapist, a pedophile, a child rapist, and, you know, every possible name in the book. Of course, I explained that the woman who had falsely accused me had withdrawn her charges and had dropped her lawsuit and had admitted that she now realized that she may have confused me with someone else, that it was maybe a case of mistaken identification. That didn't affect them because they didn't care about that. What they cared about is I was making a speech in support of Israel. So they were prepared to call me a pedophile or a child, a rapist. I did my speech. I mentioned just in the beginning, obviously, that the woman had said she may have misidentified me. I just dropped that subject and I went on and I spoke for a half an hour about what's going on in the Middle East. And then I opened it up for questions. And as I usually do, my usual rule is I only accept negative questions. You know, I've already made my speech. They've heard my side of the story. Now I want to hear, give them an opportunity to express themselves. And I said, I'll stay here as long as any of you have any critical questions or critical comments. And of course, they immediately started again on the rape issues. Oh, you were on Epstein's Island. Yeah, with my wife and my then 6 or 7 year old daughter. And there were no people on the island except for the adults who were taking care of the house that had just been bought. You know, why did I favor the reduction in the age of consent? Because 18 is much too high. Sex begins at a much earlier age, and prosecutors have far too much discretion if they can selectively prosecute. And in many cases, they were selectively prosecuting black men for having consensual sex with white women at the age of 17. So it was a civil liberties and something that many feminists approved of. That didn't satisfy them. They kept screaming and yelling. And eventually we got to some issues on the merits. But interesting, they got back to rape. And one woman said, well, why should we believe that any Israeli woman was raped? And I said, but me too, except if you're a Jew. You know, believe women. Also, believe the woman who falsely accused me and then admitted that she may have mistaken me for somebody else. Believe her and believe the Israeli women who said they were raped and they saw other people raped. But this group was so, so one-sided. And then they attacked me repeatedly for who I represented. How can you represent rapists? Well, I represented actually more victims of rape than I represented rapists. But I represent people who need a lawyer. And why should you represent people like that? You should only represent good people. I said, yeah, if you want to do that, go to Iran and then you won't have any problem. It was shocking to me that these young people had no conception. These are law students, have what it means to be a lawyer. One of them said, well, I'm only 23 years old. Why are you arguing with me? Well, you know, the people who marched with Hitler Youth in the University of Munich in the 1930s were 23 years old. The people who marched for Fidel Castro were 23 years old. The people who marched for Pol Pot were 23 years old. The people who marched for Mao Zedong were 23 years old. The people who marched for Stalin were 23 years old. Don't give me the 23-year-old business. You're 23 years old. You're an adult. You're responsible. You could get the death penalty if you murder somebody. You can be drafted into the army if we had a draft. You're an adult. You can sign a contract. You can get drunk. But suddenly, we're 23 years old, so I should somehow pander to their bigotry? No. And when I said that I believe in Martin Luther King's dream of a society in which people are judged not by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character, they all got up and they walked out. And I said, you're walking out on Martin Luther King. You're walking out because I favor equality over identity politics. They really had nothing to say. Almost none of them was able to ask an intelligent follow-up question. They had scripted questions. It really makes me worry about the future of the American bar, especially now that many states are abolishing the bar exam. They're abolishing grades. They're abolishing the law school aptitude test. Who knows who gets admitted to law school these days? And they're beginning to do the same with doctors. I hope they never get to pilots. My God, do we want pilots and surgeons picked based on their racial identity or other identity, or do we want them picked on the merits? So I made a very strong case for meritocracy, and 75% of the audience agreed with it, and the other 75% disagreed with it. And I also made a strong case against DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion, against intersectionality, and against identity politics departments, like gay studies departments, black studies departments, women's studies departments, Asian American studies departments, Indian studies departments, and Jewish studies departments. I'm against all of them. I think we should have studies. Everybody should study everybody else's cultures, and there should not be separate departments that cater to people based on ethnic identity. These departments, coupled with intersectionality and DEA, are the incubators for bigotry, anti-Semitism, anti-Asian attitudes, and all kinds of horrible, horrible things. And universities will never be restored to their rightful place as they were 20 years ago, 30 years ago. The greatest universities were in America. That's not going to be true if we have DEA. That's not going to be true if we have intersectionality. That's not going to be true if we continue to have these absurd departments. Critical race studies? No, they're not critical. If you are critical of the narrative of race, you get thrown out of the department. You get flunked out. So that's what I talked about today. And I'm planning to go to several of the universities and make similar speeches. Am I going to persuade anybody who have these signs? No, but I will certainly help the students who are pro-American and pro-Israel and pro-democracy, maybe help them strengthen their views and give them ideas in which they can fight in the marketplace of ideas. I don't want censorship. As I said, the only questions I was allowed to ask were questions that were critical and negative. That's the way I always do it. And I always respond. And that's what I did today. And that's what I'm planning to do in the future. So let's turn to the horrible tragedy that occurred in Gaza. Just on Monday night, apparently in the middle of the night, in pitch darkness, the IDF, either through a drone, probably through a drone, is what it seems like, or maybe a fighter plane, but probably a drone, ended up shooting rockets at trucks that were owned by this World Kitchen that does good work. And seven or eight innocent, good people were killed. Obviously, it was a mistake. There's no doubt about that. Why would any Israeli government ever want to kill aid workers? In fact, these were not Palestinian aid workers. These were not UNRWA. These were not Doctors Without Borders, which are really doctors for Hamas. These are not even the International Red Cross, which is anti-Israel. These were people who were generally supportive of Israel. It takes a crazy conspiratorialist to believe that anybody in Israel would ever deliberately target these aid workers and kill them. But of course, that's what we're seeing. Just look at the headlines that are around the country. Al Jazeera blamed it completely on Israel. The head of the United Nations group on Israel blamed it and said it was obviously just something that was planned by Israel. It's just conspiracy up and down the line. I don't know what happened. I had the quotes, but I don't have them now. Give me one second. Okay. Okay, I have lost them. I am a klutz. It's what happens when you're 85 years old. You lose papers. So I did lose those papers. But I can tell you what they said. So Al Jazeera obviously said it was all a completely contrived plot done by Israel deliberately. The rapporteur at the United Nations said it was clearly a plot designed to make sure that there was no aid being given to people of Gaza, notwithstanding the fact that Israel arranged for the aid, arranged for the boat, the dock, and everything, and arranged for everything to be done rightly. And Israel was in touch with the aid agency, but obviously there was a screw up, as there have been screw ups anytime there's the fog of war. One out of every five Israeli soldiers who has been shot in this war has been shot by friendly fire. Was that also deliberate? Israelis shooting Israelis? Hamas shoots Gazans, we know that. But Israeli soldiers are not going to shoot Israeli soldiers. But one out of every five shootings involved friendly fire in Israeli. Remember the three hostages that were tried to escape and did escape, and then they were shot and killed by Israeli soldiers. These are 18-year-old kids, 19-year-old kids. They saw somebody coming at them. They thought they were terrorists pretending to be Israelis, and they shot and killed them. Terrible, horrible, horrible tragedy. Imagine what the family of these people must be thinking, that their people finally escaped, and then they're shot and killed by Israelis. And look, the very October 7th, reflected the greatest intelligence failure in modern history, done by Israel. Supposed to be so good in intelligence, but and then the failure to get the ground troops and the air troops there on time to save many people who were being raped and murdered on October 7th. Armies screw up in the fog of war, but the idea that anybody would, in their right mind, believe that somehow Israel contrived to kill these people. What's next? This Monday, I'm sure Al Jazeera will have a headline, Israel caused the sun to disappear. If the earth were flat, the headline would be Israel flattened the earth. Actually, there might be something to the sun business. You remember in the book of Joshua, I think, in the Bible, I think Joshua commanded the sun to stand still. Astronomers think probably Joshua knew there was an eclipse coming. And so he took advantage of that knowledge and used it for his military advantage. But Israel's not going to make the sun disappear, even if Al Jazeera has a headline saying it did. Conspiracy theories have been rampant involving Jews from the time that Jesus was crucified. Oh, the Jews did it. No, it was the Romans who did it. A young child is found dead. Oh, the Jews must have done it too. Take his blood and use him to bake matzah. So many conspiracy theories have been promoted. And so many times the Jews, or in this case, the nation state of the Jewish people, have been blamed. It is absolutely essential to get all the facts straight. Israel is going to do a very detailed analysis of how these aid workers could have been killed. And I'm sure it was somebody's fault. I'm sure somebody was negligent. I'm sure there was a complete screw up, that there was a failure to communicate things that one hand knew that the other hand should have known. And it's so important to get that information, just as it's important to get information about the true status of food in Gaza. There'll be some questions about that that we'll deal with it. But I can tell you, as you know, I was in Israel just last week, speaking to the head of the Mossad and speaking to the prime minister and speaking to the president, speaking to the military leaders. And there is no famine in Gaza. There may be a famine in June, according to the United Nations. But we've heard the cry of wolf over and over and over again, starting in November. And the evidence of there being an actual famine doesn't mean that they're eating well. Maybe they're having only two meals a day, but there's no famine. And people are not dying of malnutrition. They are in some parts of the world that we're ignoring, but they're not dying of famine in Gaza. Hopefully that will never happen. Hopefully the Israelis, maybe the Egyptians, maybe the United States, the Jordanians will provide enough food. Right now, Hamas has enough food to feed everybody in Gaza, but they're hoarding it. They're doing the same thing to the food that they do with the tunnels. Why are so many Gazans being killed in bomb attacks? Because there are no shelters in Gaza. Oh, there are shelters. They're called 350 miles of tunnels. But not a single Gazan civilian is ever allowed into one of those holy tunnels. The tunnels are reserved only for Hamas terrorists. Israel, on the other hand, spends hundreds of millions of dollars building shelters all over Israel. Everywhere you go in Israel is a shelter. And you have 30 seconds to get into this concrete shelter. In fact, on October 7th, many of the people were killed in their shelters because they had gone into the shelters because they heard the sirens about rockets. But then the terrorists came and shot into the shelters and threw hand grenades into the shelters and burned people alive and killed them in their own shelters. So, yeah, let's get the facts. But the problem is, who is able to get the facts? Certainly not the United Nations, certainly not UNRWA, certainly not the Red Cross, certainly not Doctors Without Borders, certainly not academics. Who will get the facts? The United States could do it credibly, but they don't want to put people, soldiers, boots on the ground. And they have no presence right now in Gaza. The only people who have presence in Gaza now are people who are approved by Hamas. And if you're approved by Hamas, you can be disapproved by Hamas. Put another way, you could be killed by Hamas. And so what you're hearing from Gaza, whether it's from CNN or from the New York Times and from the reporters in Gaza, you're going to know are completely one-sided. I went over the statistics today with the students at Cardoza, going over the numbers and showing how the ratio of combatants to non-combatants killed in Gaza has been approximately 1-to-1, at worst 1.3 maybe to 1, the best ratio of civilian to combatant deaths of any war in modern history, much better than any Western democracy has ever achieved. But you wouldn't know that if you heard it on CNN. You wouldn't know that if you saw it in the New York Times, because if it leads, it bleeds. And what CNN does is just show pictures of dead children, dead babies, even though they may be a tiny, tiny, tiny percentage of all those who have been killed. Hamas doesn't even pretend to distinguish between combatants and civilians when it puts out its inflated numbers, 32,000 people, but we're not going to tell you how many of them were combatants. We are going to tell you how many of them are women and children, because we want you to believe that if you're a woman or a child, you can't be a terrorist. Well, first of all, a child is anybody under 19. And so many, many 15, 16, 17, 18-year-olds are terrorists and children, both at the same time. And obviously, you can be a woman and a terrorist. In Gaza, you can't be a woman and a lawyer or a woman and a doctor, but you can be a woman and a terrorist. And so Hamas tells you how many women and children under 19 are killed without telling you how many of them are combatants. They know, but they don't want to give you that information because they want to hide it from you. They don't want you to know the truth. Conspiracy theories abound. And they're part of the narrative. What's shocking to me is that CNN has bought into these conspiracy theories. Today on CNN, there was a headline that says, we're going to put an expert military person on after the commercial. You can watch this. We're going to put an expert military person on after the commercial who will tell you that there is clear evidence that Israel targeted deliberately these workers. All right, I listened. I even listened to the commercial. Who is this expert who's going to lie like that? So they put on Wesley Clark. And Wesley Clark says exactly the opposite. He's the expert. He says, well, it's part of war. Israel maybe could do more. But obviously, it was an accident. Wesley Clark and no other real expert would ever say that Israel deliberately targeted welfare workers in order to discourage them from giving food to the people of Gaza. They're encouraging the World Kitchen to come in. They had a good relationship with the World Kitchen. Obviously, that suffered as the result of this. And I guarantee you, there'll be court martials. They will be Israelis who are in charge of making the decision to allow the drones to fire on these trucks, who will be court-martialed and maybe worse, maybe thrown out of the military, because it was a terrible thing. Now, of course, the conspiracy theorists say, well, of course Israel knew, because there were logos on top of one of the trucks that said World Kitchen. Duh. It's in the middle of the night. It's the middle of the night. Yes, there is night vision goggles, but not from a drone. You're not going to be able to see clearly the logos. Oh, and the people in the trucks were wearing bulletproof vests. Yeah, they knew that, but the Israelis didn't. So look, was there negligence? Very likely. You know, I have a philosophy in life generally, and I think a lot of people share this philosophy. If something terrible happened, there's a choice between malevolence and negligence, or malevolence and stupidity. Always opt for negligence and stupidity. That's always going to be the best explanation, but not when it comes to conspiracy theorists. Conspiracy theorists will always attribute intention and deliberateness, and that's what they're doing in this case. So be careful what you read and how you analyze what you read, and be skeptical. Always be skeptical. Skepticism is my middle name. I'm skeptical of everything. I'm skeptical of the reports by Israel. I'm skeptical by the reports against Israel. Facts, facts, facts. Who are you going to believe, me or your lying eyes? Make your own decisions based on your best analysis of the best information. Part of the problem is a lot of the information is not really available. I got a lot of the information, but it took me traveling to Israel to get it. And I saw some of the documents and some of the pictures. Some of them are public, some of them are not. But that's the best way to find out information. That's why we need to keep the marketplace of ideas open. That's why we need always to have freedom of speech, always to have a First Amendment, never to have censorship. The information that's going on in the Middle East redoubles my commitment to freedom of speech and to the marketplace of ideas. All right, let's take some letters on a variety of subjects. I think we could add six bananas for the past few court decisions, starting with the Fawny Willis case. I see us as a true banana republic. One more flush and we're going down the bowl to become a third world status. Never imagined my golden years to be this. Look, I'm still at six bananas because the cases are going both ways. The Supreme Court did hold that the Trump can't be taken off the ballot. This appellate courts in New York did reduce the fine against or the bail against Donald Trump. So we're still at six bananas. Let's hope we never get to seven, but we may. This is an interesting one. Thank you for another great show. But I disagree with you on two topics. Not everything said about or against Jews is anti-Semitism. Yes, it is. If you say something about the Jews, whether it be positive or negative, it's bigotry. You can't say anything about the Jews any more than you can say anything about the blacks or the women or the gays. There's no such thing as the Jews. For as many Jews as there are that many opinions, there are that many statements. So once I hear the Jews, I begin to stand back and say, wait a minute. I know a lot of people who are Jews, but I don't know anything called the Jews. So I think it is bigotry when you talk about the Jews, even if it's very positive. The Jews are so smart. No, the Jews are so conniving. No. Some Jews are smart. Some Jews are dumb. I know some of each. Okay. The next one is, your take on dual citizenship is off base, in my opinion. There should be no other locality than the United States, and I think dual citizenship should be done away with. Either you are a citizen of the United States and are loyal to it, or you are a citizen of another country, and that's where your loyalty should be. Look, there's a fair point to be made about citizenship, but not about dual loyalty. Let me tell you about a conversation I had with the great Justice Antonin Scalia. We were friends, and what we had, you know, I knew his father. He was a professor at Brooklyn College when I was the president of student government. And what we shared in common was we both grew up with very, very deeply seated religious traditions. He, a Jesuit Catholic, and me, an Orthodox a Jew. And one day we were having a very serious discussion. We were actually in Israel having a serious discussion. And I actually wrote about this. And I put to him the question, what if there was a direct conflict between the United States Constitution, you as a Supreme Court justice, and your obligations as a Catholic, not just the advice of the Catholic Church, but the actual rulings of the Catholic Church, what would you do? And he said he would have to comply with the rulings of the Catholic Church, that for him, his Catholicism came before his Americanism. He hopes that the conflict would never occur, but if it did, his Catholicism comes before, because his Catholicism is a relationship to God. And he can't violate God's order or the orders of the Pope. So I said, what about capital punishment? The Vatican is against capital punishment. He made an interesting and valid distinction. He said, yes, the Vatican advises against capital punishment, but it's not ex cathedra. It's not an absolute obligation. You can still go to heaven. You can still get absolution, whatever. If you or involved in an execution. You can't if you're involved in an abortion. There are differences. But his view is that his obligation as a Catholic came before his as a justice. And if there were a conflict, he would have to retire, resign as a justice. He's written this in an article called First Matters. That's his prerogative. That's his prerogative. And everybody in America, that's the greatness of America. You don't have to swear a loyalty oath. You can be a very religious Catholic. You can be an Orthodox Jew. You can be a great supporter of anything. And even if it conflicts with America, you're still an American as long as you don't do anything that violates American law. That's what George Washington wrote to the Jews of Newport back in 1790. So it's a good question, but I think one of the virtues of America is you can have multiple loyalties. Joe Lieberman was an American first. I'm an American first. I know people who are not, who are Catholics first, Jews first, Protestants first, gays first, women first. That's their prerogative as long as they stay within the law. Keep up the good work, Mr. D. I think it's so great to see a Democrat lawyer as honest as you. Come on, a little bit stereotyped there. There are at least two or three other Democrat lawyers who are honest. Professor Reggie Walton, a judge in the same DC district where Trump will be on trial, went on CNN and made some disparaging remarks about the former president. Was he in breach of ethics for Walton to engage in extrajudicial condemnation on television news network? I know Judge Walton. I like him. He's a very nice guy, and he's a very moderate guy. I think he made a terrible mistake by going on television and saying anything about a defendant who was in front of the district court on which he used to be, I think, chief judge, now is a senior judge. And I think there has been a bar complaint filed against him, and we'll see how that works out. Okay. Alan is under the misimpression that the lady with the scales is still wearing a blindfold. I've never been under this misimpression. From the day I started practicing law, I saw that lady peeking under the blindfold. I saw judges rendering justice based on who the defendant was or who the litigants were, violating the precept in the Bible that says, do not recognize litigants who are appearing before you. Do not make justice depend on recognition of who the defendants are. So the lady with the blindfold is a myth. And the reality is that who it is and what ethnicity, what background, all matter. And that's legal realism. And that's sometimes too bad. Okay, somebody tries to correct me. 15 weeks, not 5 weeks in Florida. A mistake that shouldn't be made. Well, it wasn't a mistake. There are two issues. Number one, the Supreme Court of Florida upheld a 15-week ban, but then the Florida legislature introduced, if I'm not mistaken, it was a 6-week ban. And that will go into effect, and we'll see what the courts hold about that. So there's both 15 weeks and 6 weeks. It's been stated unequivocally that film footage of starving children released months ago was from Syria. Yeah, I've heard that. Why hasn't a reporter from a single news agency, especially any from the West, investigated the amount of food currently available and eaten in Gaza? Well, that's the point I've been making. Why was a doctor from Doctors Without Borders allowed to claim a month ago that starvation was reaching a critical point without anyone calling her out? And it's true. Nobody calls them out. Show me evidence that there is starvation as distinguished from hunger. There's hunger. Yeah, but there's not starvation. There's not famine. And if, to the extent there is, it's Hamas's fault. They have just loads and loads of food that they're hoarding and hiding and keeping from the average person. So if a child were to die of malnutrition, and there's no evidence that any child who was healthy died of malnutrition, blame that on Hamas. Blame that on their parents not going out and getting the food. There is food. The letter continues. I've seen shots of healthy, well-fed men. I've seen shots of fat women. One foreign news agency made the mistake of showing local markets full of fresh produce. Why are so many willing to perpetuate the lie? It's absolutely true. And it's a really, really good question. Finally, the last word goes to Mr. Dershowitz. You've apparently lost your damn mind. See, the problem is I don't know what I lost my mind over. Is it Israel? Is it, who knows? Is it Trump? So if I did lose my mind, please, next time you write, tell me what I've lost my mind over. See you next week.
Save big money on everything for your next project at Menards. Spring is here, making it the perfect time for outdoor projects. Suncast storage sheds are an excellent solution for protecting outdoor lawn and gardening tools. They're easy to assemble, and the all-weather construction provides water resistance and UV protection. Save big on Suncast storage sheds. View our selection of Suncast products today in-store and on Menards.com.
Save big money at Menards.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.